value, given by the peak value divided by the square root of 2. And the average power is just IV, but in terms of the RMS values. Okay, if I have resistors, a combination of resistors without any intermediate things like capacitors or batteries mixed up in them, so something like this diagram, which we had looked at, these two resistors are in parallel. I can replace them with an equivalent resistance, which I can get from this formula, right? 1 over the equivalent resistance for a parallel combination is 1 over R1 plus 1 over R2. If I have a third one here, I add 1 over R3. Okay, once I replace that with an equivalent resistance, then the 2 ohm here is in series with this combination. For series resistances, I just add the resistances. Okay, and that, putting using this, I can sometimes use that to find out what the equivalent resistance of a combination of resistors is. However, if I had a battery right here, I can't do it. So that's what I meant. Or if I put a capacitor in there, all right, I can't use that formula anymore, because that just messes up the derivation, right? But in this case, those are just resistors without a battery. The battery's set off on the side. Once I've replaced this combination with one resistor, then I can tell you how much current is at least going along that path. Okay. And then the new stuff at the end, we talked about Kirchhoff's rules. There are two rules. Okay, we look for junctions. In this case, a junction would be this point or that point. Okay, we look at the total current coming in. It's going to be equal to the total current going out. And basically, that's conservation of charge. Okay, when we look at that. For the loop rule, we look at any possible loop that we could have. Okay, going around like the full cycle, closed loop. Here's a closed loop, or going around the outside is a closed loop. Okay, for those closed loops, I look at the sum of the rises around the loop and the sum of the drops in potential. Okay, this is basically conservation of energy, and that gives me, for each loop, an equation. So we get a set of equations that we can solve for unknowns, depending what the unknowns are. Sometimes the unknown could be an unknown resistance. Of course, in this case, I would have to supply it with a current. And I can't have more unknowns than equations. Okay? So, that's the basic idea. We had done this example, okay, using series and parallel, and came up with some ideas. And what I want to do is go back to this example and apply Kirchhoff's rules, okay, and explain how we do Kirchhoff's rules on these circuits. So one of the things you have to think about is identifying, okay, the junctions, identifying any loops, and figuring out the currents, which direction the currents are going, etc. So I look at this particular diagram, I see a battery, and I can guess that I have a current that's flowing across the 2 ohm resistor. Let me call that I1. So you can imagine a bunch of charge coming along here. It gets to the junction, and depending upon the values of the resistors, right, we have a certain amount of current going off in each direction. Let's say I have current I2 going down the first 4 ohm, and I have a current of I3 going down the second. So let's see, I'll do it over here, junction. So for the junction rule, I can find the first junction, which I'll pick at the top. And what is the current coming in?
I1.
I1, do we agree? And what's the current going out?
I3.
I2's going out, I3's going out, right? So add those together, I2 plus I3. Well, there's a second junction. Okay, what's coming in to this junction?
I2.
And I3. So we've got I2 plus I3, how it's going out?
I1.
It's the same equation. So I don't have to write that. I didn't write it down. But, right, so it really doesn't matter which of these I look at, I'm going to get the same equation. All right, then the next part is the loop. You'll notice that I just threw in some currents. I didn't spend any time thinking about the direction. All right, just made it up. Well, I could be wrong. Okay, if I'm wrong, I'll find out in the end by getting a current that's negative. I don't do the problem over again, that just tells me the direction. The magnitude, assuming I've done all the math right, is going to be correct. Okay, the direction. Okay. Is something some people might worry about. Should I draw the arrow this way? Should I draw it the other way? Especially when you throw a bunch of batteries in. Don't waste any time thinking about it. Just make sure you get distinct currents in the right places. Okay, and everything will come out right in the end. All right, loop. There are three loops. Turns out that two of the loops are independent. The third one is just you can get from the other two. All right, so if I write down the equation for a loop, that the inside loops, and I write down the equation for the outside loops, we find out that I can combine two of those equations to get the third one. So they're not independent. So I only need two. If you're not sure, write it down. See what happens. Okay. The simplest thing to do is pick the inside loops. We could either pick a clockwise or a counterclockwise direction to go around. Okay, I typically go clockwise. It doesn't matter. I could do one clockwise, one counterclockwise. Okay. But whatever you pick, stick with it. We'll call that loop one and call this loop two. And now what we do is we go around the loops and we look at the drops and the rises. So loop one. Now come up, pick a point on this loop. And just start going around in the direction I indicated. So I come across the 2-ohm resistor. If I'm going with the current, then it's a drop. If I were going the opposite direction, it would be a rise. Whenever I go across a battery, okay, it's a rise if I go from negative to positive. It's a drop if I go from positive to negative. Okay, so those are the things you need to know. All right, so going across the 2-ohm resistor, is that a rise or a drop?
Drop.
A drop. So we could, doesn't matter what order I put this in, but sometimes it might be useful to remember which side of the equation you're working on. Okay, so you said that was a drop. It's a drop of how much? Well, for resistors, V equals IR. So that's the value of the rise or the drop. In this case, it's a drop, so it's going to be what? The resistance, which is 2, times the current, which is
2I.
2I what?
1.
2I1. Okay, are we awake yet? Okay, so now I've gone over the 2-ohm, then I come down the 4-ohm. Is that a rise or a drop?
Drop.
It's a drop of?
4I2.
And now we go back around, and I go across the battery. Is that a rise or a drop? to rise. How much?
6 amps.
Okay. So you notice in each of these cases, I've got the equations with the unknowns. In this case, I have one equation and three unknowns. There's an equation with two unknowns. Combine those together, I have two equations and three unknowns. Is that enough? No, I need three. Where do I get the third one? Well, I go to another loop.
Thank you.
So I could either go with this loop, as I indicated, or the outside loop. Correct. So just for fun, maybe you should go back and redo the problem and take the outside loop instead of loop two and see if you get the same answer. Okay, so now let's start and go around loop two. I'll just pick a point, start going around, go across the second, whatever this is, a 4-ohm resistor, and what do we get? We get a drop of
4.93.
And then we come along here, and I go up the other 4 ohm, and I get a rise of 4.92. Anything else? So as I look around this loop, there's only two circuit elements, so I should only have two terms. Around here, I've got 1, 2, 3 circuit elements. I should have 3 terms. So I didn't forget anything. Okay. Of course, I could have gotten things on the wrong side of the equation. All right, so now I have 3 equations and 3 unknowns. The physics is done. This is the first thing we want to make sure. Do you get the physics right? Okay, the rest is math. Okay. How would you proceed to solve something like this? These three equations.
Solve for one variable.
Say what?
Solve for one variable.
You'd solve for a variable. Well, usually with 3 equations and 3 unknowns, you want to reduce it to 3 equations and 2 unknowns. And then you can reduce that to 1 equation and 1 unknown, and then you're done. The other thing is you look for the ones that are the simplest. Is there anything simple?
Loop 2.
Pardon?
Loop 2.
Loop 2. Why?
It's 4.
Because that's just 2 terms. Okay. More than that, I can cancel out the 4 because I can simplify this. So sometimes it's useful to actually divide out common factors. There's a 2 here. I have a 4 or 6. They're all even. So I can divide out by 2. I can simplify that. So we can rewrite our equation. So let's see. I2 is equal to I3 from the second equation, dividing the third equation. Dividing the second equation by 2, I get 3 is equal to I1 plus 2I2. And then we have I1 is I2. 2 plus I3. So if I clean them up a little bit, they don't look quite as scary. I2 is equal to I3. So that tells me that I1, well, let's see, if I2 is I3, this second equation has an I1 and an I2, maybe I should get rid of the I3. So I1 is equal to 2I2. Okay, by substituting I3 is equal to I2. And then I come over and say if I1 is equal to 2I2, I can plug that in here, and that will give me 3 is equal to 2I2 plus 2I2. Or 4I2. So I2 is equal to 3/4. Units or amps. Now you might recall the discussion we had 2 days ago. I know a lot's gone on in your life since I last saw you. But in our discussion the other day, we went through and we actually came up with what? Something like, in this loop we have 1.5 amps, And then I asked you, what do you think the current is in each of these? And you told me it was half of that. Well, there it is, there's I2. All right. Of course, I2 is equal to I3, so I can get I3 is also 0.75 amps. And I1 is either twice I2 or I1 plus I2. So we get 1.5. So I could do it this way. I2 plus I3 is 1.5 amps. However, now I can come back here and change these so they're not equal. Right, and now we know how to do the problem. Before we did it just from some common sense, right? We had current coming in, equal resistances, therefore we expected equal currents. Okay, but if they're not equal, you can't use that logic. You have to think a little harder. Okay, but there is a proportion there, but this is a nice straightforward way to go through and determine what the currents are throughout the circuit. And that's the whole point of applying these rules. All right, let's do a different problem. Okay, in my book, problem number 85, but the setup is not too bad. We have a couple of resistors. Batteries. Okay, three resistors, and in this case, three batteries, different orientations. 2.0 ohms, 8.0 ohms, 4 ohms, and then what I have is a 3.0 volt battery, a 6.0 volt battery, and a 9.0 volt battery. So there we have the diagram. Again, straightforward, determine what the currents are. Okay, and the problem. Okay, so without thinking, I'm just going to throw some currents. So I have a current that comes in here, then this comes over, branches off. I have a current that comes down there and a current that goes down here. Okay, I'm not paying attention. And then these currents come together, right? So current along the left branch is one value. Okay. It sounds like you guys can do this problem. Okay, starting at the junction, I'm going to go again around clockwise. Go across the 8 ohm, arise or drop? Of? 8 I what?
3.
Nine volt battery, is that a rise or a drop?
Okay.
Back over here, going up the middle. 4 ohm. I hear rises and drops, so we have some confusion here. All right, so I'm going up this, which way is the current going? In the opposite direction, so therefore it's a rise. Right, if you're going with the current, it's a drop. If you're because you're going against the current to rise. So it's a rise of
4i2.
4 times the current, 4i2. Go through the 6-volt batteries at a rise or a drop. Okay. All right, so we can make some adjustments here. I can add 6 and 3 and get 9. And we can add 9 and 6 and get 15. All right. Question?
So if you said if you're going against the current, it's a rise. So I'm confused on the why the 6 volts is in with the drops.
That was the rule that applies to resistors. So the rule for resistors, in this, the 2-ohm case, right, the current is going in that direction. I chose to go around the loop in the same direction that would go with the current, so that's a drop. Okay, when I came down the 4-ohm, that was in the direction of the current, that was a drop. But when I did the second loop, I'm going against the current, so that's a rise. But the battery is always positive to negative is a drop, negative to positive is a rise.
Okay.
Independent of the current.
Okay.
Okay. All right. Just a little extra here. What if I went on the outside loop? Let's say I did a loop that went all around the outside. What does that give us? Well, it's going to give me an extra equation, but I just want to point out that one could pick that one, so let's do it for fun. So, standing here, I would go across. Is that a rise or a drop?
Drop.
Okay, that's a drop of?
2i1.
Go across the 8-ohm. Drop of?
8.93.
Come down to 9-volt, that's a drop. Go across and up the 3.
Rise.
The rise. And then I'm done. So if I were to combine these two equations, I could come up with this one. You'll notice that the 8i3 is here. There's the 9. This 6 will cancel with that 6, and I get a 3 in terms of volts. And my I1 survives, and this 4i2. Or I could just say, this 4i2, I could take that one and that one, solve for 4i2, bring this over, put it in here, rearrange it, and I'll get the same equation. So the point is, only 2 of these equations are independent. We're fine just picking these 2, but there may be occasion when the outside loop is much simpler than the inside loops. And you might want to use that. Okay. All right, so the end result here is that I1 is equal to I2 plus I3. That's one equation. I'll just stick with these two. 9 is equal to 2I1 plus 4I2. And then the second loop, we have 4I2. Well, what I would do is bring the 4I2 over. So 8I3. Minus 4i2. Well, maybe I could have done the other way. 9 and 6 is 15. Bring that to the other side. So I can put all the constants on this side. All right. There's all sorts of ways you can rearrange these. The point is that 3 equations and 3 unknowns. What I could do is replace the I1 in the second equation with I1 2 plus I3. And that'll give me 2 equations for I2 plus I3. Or I2 and I3, and I can solve those as 2 equations and 2 unknowns. Okay, so the idea is try to substitute or do something to reduce it to 2 equations and 2 unknowns, and then proceed. Right? All the physics, though, is here. The rest is just math. Okay, so those are Kirchhoff's laws or Kirchhoff's rules. All right, there's a couple other little things that I want to cover. As I had mentioned before, right, we can put batteries in, but a real battery can offer resistance. Okay, in fact, real batteries have internal resistance. So if I look at a typical flashlight battery, which is kind of representative of some batteries. We have the positive terminal sitting here, the negative terminal sitting there. Okay, the battery is rated typically at something like, say, 1.5 amps. I mean, 1.5 volts, sorry. So you have the 1.5 volt battery, but you don't always get 1.5 volts, right? After you use the battery for a while and then you go and you put a voltmeter on it, you know, you may get 1.2 volts or, you know, even less. At some point, the battery no longer works. So what's happening is as the battery gets older, the internal resistance is essentially growing. Okay, you can think of this battery, as having a resistor in it. How we could depict that is the following. I could take my positive terminal, there's the negative terminal, and I could represent the battery, not just with the battery symbol, but with an extra little resistance, which we call the internal resistance. And we can say that the voltage across the battery, is the EMF. Remember at the beginning of the chapter, we introduced EMF. And then the potential difference from here to there is the actual voltage difference produced by the battery, right? And so if we look at this, the actual voltage produced by the battery, if I have some current I going through that battery, it is going to be, it's going to be the EMF, but there's going to be a potential drop across the resistor. Okay, what's the magnitude of the drop across that resistor if I have current I going through it? I little r. Okay. So that's the potential difference across this. Of course, the EMS is the maximum amount of potential difference the battery is rated for. Okay, the actual I'm going to get out is this, and it also depends upon what current is, right? As I crank the current up, the overall contribution here matters. So that's the potential difference across a real battery that has some internal resistance. Okay. And so we could throw this in there. Right now, we've just been assuming that there's no internal resistance, or this 3 volts is not the EMF, but it's the real voltage that's coming out. Right? So most of the time we've been ignoring that little contribution. So if you're told that a battery has a certain internal resistance, you have to throw another resistor in there just to make up for that. And that's all there is to it. There's nothing really sophisticated. Also, we haven't talked about capacitors. Right? We spent most of the time in the last couple hours talking about resistors in batteries and circuits. So what happens if I have capacitors in circuits? So we can put capacitors in series and in parallel combinations, just like we did for resistors. So let's say I have capacitors. First off, what's the symbol for a capacitor? This can get confusing if you're sloppy, because it almost looks like a battery, right? Except these two parallel lines representing parallel plates should be the same length. And so there I have a capacitor. And if I want to put capacitors in parallel, then I can draw these two capacitors connected. It's just like my parallel resistors, except I have capacitors instead. Right, and this is turned on the side. And what I just drew. And then I can connect this to a battery. So we have some voltage. Being careful to make sure my battery doesn't look like a capacitor. Let's say the capacitors have capacitances C1 and C2. And then I have some kind of a voltage, V, across this. And the idea for capacitor combinations is the same as resistor combinations. I'd like to know what is the equivalent capacitance. Right. Can I replace this combination of parallel capacitors with a single capacitor? Call that C parallel. And that single capacitor is connected to the same battery. Okay, and we see what we get. Now, what happens when I do connect the battery to a capacitor? What does it do? It charges up the capacitor. Okay. Thinking of these as two parallel plates, right? We have on the first plate positive Q. On the second plate, I get a charge of negative Q. And that's what we get when I just connect a battery to one of these. So the question is, what happens when I have two capacitors? Okay. Well, what we know is that if I look at this point and that point, I put a voltmeter across this, I measure a potential difference. The potential difference, right, or the voltage that I measure across there, is the voltage across each capacitor. I'm assuming the wires have no resistance, so therefore both capacitors have the same potential difference applied to them. And that potential difference is V. So that much I know. But if both of these have a voltage that's the same, and the capacitances in general are different, then maybe the amount of charge that's stored on the plates is different. So capacitor 1, I have charge Q1 on one side and minus Q1 on the other. Capacitor 2, I have charge Q2 on one side, minus Q2 on the other. Okay, Q1 and Q2 are not necessarily the same. Okay. But the total charge here is going to be equal to Q. So I'm going to have that Q on my equivalent capacitor as charge Q1 plus Q2. And then the question is, if I have a capacitor sitting here, charge Q1 across capacitor 1, how's that related to the voltage? So in general, how is the voltage related to the capacitance in the charge?
Q equals CV.
Q equals CV. So for Q1, Q is CV, but of course C is C1 for this capacitor. For Q2, that's the charge that's on capacitor 2. And of course, the amount of charge that's stored on this one is just going to be Q times V. Of course, I didn't tell you exactly what Q is here, but we're charge on that brain. All right, so Q is CV. If I look at this diagram, and that C is what we call CP. That's just the equivalent capacitance. If I compare these sides, what do I see? Ah, there's a V common to both. So I can pull out the voltage, and we find out that for parallel capacitors, the equivalent capacitance is just the sum. All right, so what we can tell here is that for capacitors, the parallel combination is very similar to the series resistors. It's opposite. So if we know how to do this, we don't have to memorize which one it is over there. We just know that capacitors have opposite equations. Okay, so if I look at this parallel over there, that corresponds to series. Series resistors we add, so therefore we add the capacitors. Okay. So just a way to try to remember this without trying to memorize both and then getting them confused. So if you know the resistance and you know the capacitors are opposite, then you don't have to memorize this equation. You can write it down. All right. We have the same kind of story for series capacitors. For series capacitors, again, series essentially means one after the other. And then we connect this to some voltage. Capacitance C1, capacitance C2. And then I'd like this to look like that once I find the equivalent capacitance, except I would call it CS instead of CP. So now I have to ask, okay, in this case, how does it work? Well, as I come along here, right, I have a voltage difference from there to there. But individually, I have a voltage difference between these two and a voltage difference between those two. So the voltages across the capacitors now is not the same. Over here, the voltage drop across each of these is the same. Here they're different, so I'm going to have my drop across this one is V1, and my other drop across that, which is V2. And we know that the total drop is V1 plus V2, should match that of the battery. So V should be equal to V1 plus V2. The other thing we should think about is how the charge is distributed. So if I set up a charge Q sitting here, I get a charge minus Q on there. But what's happening? This is pulling some charge over to this plate. That's causing that to have the opposite charge. By pulling some charge from here, it's leaving this one with a positive, so that's basically neutral, right? Total charge in between these plates is zero. So all of this is a redistribution of charge. And if that's Q, this is minus Q. And so that is essentially how the charges line up with these plates. Okay, and this Q is, of course, the same as that Q. Looking at V is equal to V1 plus V2. V1, well, let's go back to our equation back here. Remember that Q, let's see, let me write it here. Q is equal to CV, so what is V? Q over C. So I can replace each of these with the appropriate charge divided by the capacitance. So V1 is Q over C1, V2 is Q over C2, and that should be equal to the voltage drop. But that voltage is the same as this battery, So it should be whatever the equivalent capacitance is, right? Q over the equivalent capacitance. So this is going to be Q over the equivalent capacitance, but I'm not going to put a P on here because I'm doing series, so I'll put an S for the series. And now we can begin to smell what's coming out of this. All right, cancel out the Q's, and that gives me the parallel, which I promised was opposite to what you get for resistance. All right, so this is series, which looks like the equation you have for parallel resistors. All right, so parallel resistors have this formula, which is the same if I replace C's here for series capacitors. So we just have to interchange the word series and parallel while we're dealing with bunch of resistors and capacitors. Okay. Other than that, it's just the same thing. Instead of doing combinations of resistors, you can do combinations of capacitors. The formulas look similar, and it's pretty much the same kind of operation. So there's nothing really mysterious here, other than just remembering which formula to use when. All right, the same kind of problem that we had before. Okay, everybody's got the data about the exam and the review and everything, right? And you're getting my emails. It's also important. All right, there's one more thing that the book covers. Okay, that will cover kind of loosely, and we'll talk a little bit more of what happens when I do AC circuits. But there's something interesting that happens when I consider RC circuits. Now, we used to have a lab in which we took these nice big fat capacitors, we connect a resistor to it, and we charge the capacitor up, we watch it charge, and then we discharge it. Okay, nowadays you guys, if you do an RC type of lab, then you have these little capacitors which don't look quite as scary. Okay. Won't shock you like the other ones look. Okay. So the idea is, how do I get a capacitor charged? So we take and think of a circuit. We have a capacitor. Even if it's just wires, the wires have some resistance. Okay, but typically you put it, one does this by just putting in a resistor. And there we have an RC. It's almost a circuit. I have to actually put a battery in here. We could put a little switch. Okay. So here's a battery, and just for the sake of knowing what a switch might look like in a circuit, okay, sometimes I'll do something like this. You have two little terminals, and you have a little throw switch that you can close. Right now the circuit's open, which means no current will flow, and then I can close the switch. Or this could just be plugging it into the wall to complete the circuit, right? So you could do that. So we start off with a capacitor that's not charged. Means what? There's no charge in the place. And then I close this circuit. And what happens? Well, once I close the circuit, current begins to flow. And once the current begins to flow, charge begins to build up on the plates. Okay, and I begin to get a potential difference across the plate. And so that's basically what's going on. And this will continue until the charge reaches a particular level when this is fully charged. Okay. And so here's my voltage that's sitting on the battery. So that's what an RC circuit looks like. And that's what happens when we charge it. If I were to take the battery out and then put the wires together, I allow whatever stored charge I have on here to flow off, and then can discharge the battery. Okay. So charging
a capacitor. The idea is I want to look at how much charge I have on this as a function of time. So we think of Q as a function of T. For charging, I start off at T equal to zero with no charge. This charge begins to build up, but it levels off, or at least goes asymptotic. There's a big word for math, right? Remember asymptotes? Things, right? This is a horizontal asymptote. It approaches a constant value. Let's call that constant value Q0. So that's the typical behavior. How do I know this? Well, I need a little more in calculus to do that. Okay, one can actually write down what's called a differential equation and solve that differential equation for this. Okay. So it's a nice simple differential equation that one can solve, but all we care about is what the solution is. So Q as a function of T turns out to be Q0 times 1 minus an exponential. It's a decaying exponential, e to the t over tau, where tau is called the time constant. It's a Greek T. So if I put in here T equal to zero, what do I get? E to the zero. E to zero is one minus one is zero. So that starts off fine. What happens to this exponential as T gets big? What does a decaying exponential look like? It just goes like that. So that goes to
zero.
So this whole thing goes to Q zero. So everything works, right, at least mathematically. What you don't know is what tau is. Turns out that tau is RC. So what do we need to understand from this? We basically should understand the behavior of the amount of charge as it builds up. It builds up in this kind of exponential way where there's some constant tau that's in here. Now, if I were to change the resistance or the capacitance, right, this curve is going to have a difference, right? It's going to go either faster to Q0 or slower. It's going to charge up real quickly or it'll take forever to charge. It depends upon this RC factor. Now, typically what one does is, you want to say, about how long does it take to charge, roughly? Well, actually forever. Ideally, this never hits that line. All right, so asking questions like how long does it take to charge don't necessarily make sense. Okay, but one does say, well, if I know the time constant, if I let T be equal to tau, then Q is Q0, 1 minus e to the minus tau over tau, negative 1. Now, e to the minus 1, what is e?
It's a constant.
Right, it's a constant. It's a well-known constant. Right? Yeah, the natural exponential. E is about 2.718, blah, blah, blah. It's roughly 3, right? So that's about a third. 1 minus a third is about 2/3. So somewhere, okay, at the time constant, if I come over here to the time constant tau, I come up, I'm roughly 2/3. Well, that's more like 80%, right? But I'm roughly 2/3 of the way. So, one time constant tells me I'm roughly 2/3 charged. If I were to look at that, it's actually 0.632. 0.632. 3 to roughly Q0. So it's a little less than 2/3, so I'm off, but still. So that's the idea, is that it's roughly 2/3. So people will use the time constant as a way to say how charged this could be or what, right? So if I look at the RC circuits with different time constants, if I look at the time constants, I can tell roughly which one's going to charge faster. What about discharging? So again, we'll look at that. All right, so for discharging, as I mentioned, what you do is you take the capacitor, which is connected to a resistor, you unplug the battery. This is already charged up with some Q0 on one side, minus Q0 on the other, and just take these two wires, put them together, and give it some place for the charge to go. There's no battery there, now the charge is going to flow off. Well, it turns out that if I start off with this charge at Q0, it's naturally just going to decay, and it looks essentially like a decaying exponential. One can also solve this problem and find that Q is a function of T. It's Q0 at T equals 0, drops off exponentially, and guess what? It drops off with a time constant, tau equal to RC, same tau. All right, so discharging capacitors decay exponentially. Charging capacitors will increase in some exponential fashion, but more like this. It's not exactly exponential. And that the time constant is what governs how fast or slow it charges or discharges. Okay, so those are, that's the basic idea for charging capacitors without actually going into where these things came from. That's one of the unfortunate things, or maybe fortunate things, in this class that I can't derive everything for you. Okay, but at least give you an idea of what this looks like. Of course, one thing could be mysterious here. The units. What are the units of tau? What did I tell you tau was? Time constant. What do you think the units are?
Seconds.
I mapped it on the axis, right? T is seconds. Better have units of seconds. But you look at that and you say, what? No, wait a minute. That's got to be ohm coulombs or something, right? Or ohm times farads. What's an ohm farad? So let's look at, for the fun of it, as we wrap up the chapter, let's ask, how on earth do we get seconds out of this? And this goes to dimensional analysis, something that you were told about back in chapter 1, and probably didn't think much of it. But you really need to pay attention to your units whenever you're doing things. So let's see. Units of RC. So let's see. R is units of ohms. Capacitance is units of farads. Units. So let's see, what can we reduce an ohm to?
Volt over an amp.
That's a what?
Volt over an amp.
Okay. An ohm. Well, V equals IR. So we can get volts per amp. So, okay, volts per amp. What about farads? Where did they come from? When did we first see the unit farad? Capacitance. All right, Q is equal to CV. So that's going to be what? Coulombs divided by volts. All right, volts go out. So now I have coulombs. Coulomb is a basic unit, right? We have mass, length, time, and the thing that we've added this semester is coulomb. That's a basic, we can't reduce a coulomb to mass, length, or time. So what about amps? What are amps?
Coulombs per second.
Amps are coulombs per second because that's charge per time. Coulombs. So the coulombs go out, and I get 1/1/seconds, which is
3.2 hertz.
That's 1/1 hertz, but it's actually 1/1/seconds.
So 1/1 seconds.
Yeah, 1/1, right? This is a 1/1 second. So 1/1/seconds.
Time.
Seconds. All right. So I do get time. All right. So now you shouldn't feel too bad. Not that you didn't begin with, okay, but sometimes you do have, you do sit back and think about the units, right? So that's the kind of thing you do if you're worried about whether the units work or not. Yes?
So is that the end of what's going to be on the first test?
That's not only the end of what's on the first test, that's the end of chapter 20.